This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
DC for you. DC for you. DC for you.
DC for you. Current event is live, and that's right, absolutely live, according to the rules of Hypertime. And for all of you who aren't like well versed in all of that, that means that everything is happening all at once, and yet also never actually happened, and is also going to happen. So we are live, we are recorded, we are via tape delay, and we also have not happened yet. So no. We are all things to all people in all existences. And if your eyes aren't crossed yet, they will be. Just give it a little bit of time, because this episode is going to get real deep on some craziness that's been happening in DC Comics in the month of September. And oh God, Todd, it has been a month, hasn't it?
It has been. Sorry, I'm fading in and out of existence from my prison cell here.
Yeah, it's like you crumbled to pieces in one scene, and then I pick up in another book, and I'm like, oh, there you are. You're perfectly fine. Right, that's the good news I have for you, is that you are perfectly fine in another book.
Well, that's good news. Yeah. And also, it is good news that I am Saturn Girl.
Yes. Right, and your French accent is really coming through. I was hoping for like a little Gerard Depardieu, or
he is not here right now. He is on vacation and hiatus until we ever finish Watchmen, the audio adaptation.
Oh, speaking of things that are not really likely to happen, Doomsday Clock. Doomsday Clock actually did have an issue this month after much delay. We were just talking about all of that, and you know, honestly, Doomsday Clock and Justice League kind of got a little interwoven recently, but I think that's just the issue that really piqued both of our interests at the beginning of this month. Doomsday Clock number 11 of 12. So we're so close to the end now. But this issue got real exposition heavy unexpectedly.
Yeah, we did a series recap to this point, but a lot of the threads came together and reminded you. Number 10 to me was the ultimate in data dump as far as continuity and Dr. Manhattan going through time. And here we're kind of racing towards the finish line, and we have this imminent Doc Manhattan and Superman confrontation.
And it does sort of happen at the end of the issue, but I think this issue really very much focused in on the Lex Luthor of it all. Like, how does Lex fit into all of this insanity?
And it's pretty cool that he's been using his amazing brain to put the pieces together and find all these Doc Manhattan pictures that have been dropped around the world as Manhattan's been checking out our Earth. But, you know, it's comics. Nothing makes sense. Nothing matters. It's all happening, and it all never happened. So I'm not sure what the end result, the end game will be here. What will change forever? You know, some of the objectives we had when this series started have happened, but haven't necessarily had anything to do with the events of Doomsday Clock. And characters who are alive in Doomsday Clock are dead and in regular continuity and vice versa, as we were talking. So I don't know. I don't know where this is happening in the timeline, or if it even matters, you know, because it's a nice achievement. It's a good story and wonderful art, of course. But is DC as a company or as a universe going to even take note of this?
And that is still a good question, even though I can say that after I read the most recent issues of Justice League, which were issues 31 and 32, it actually does feel like there's some connective tissue happening here. Because as it happens in issue 11, we still see this, I believe it's Johnny Thunder, who's a remnant of the old JSA. And we have Saturn Girl, who is a member of the Legion that Geoff Johns kind of inserted into all the background happenings of Rebirth back in 2016. Well, I guess since we are like fully spoiling every issue we're going to talk about, Saturn Girl is kind of undone by Ozymandias as he asks her a very important question about Superman in the future. Like Superman is integral to the future that she comes from, and he asks the question, well, does Superman even remember you? And when she says no, she begins to fade away.
Ah, and yet what's happening in Superman right now.
Yeah, precisely. Like it's not just that, but also Ozymandias tells Johnny Thunder that he shouldn't worry because it's not the past that's going to be erased. It's the future. But as we all know, just because you erase one future doesn't mean that a new timeline is not established. And
I don't like the hyper-timing things away. That's something I have a problem with. Just saying, oh, well, anyway, here's Wonderwall, or anyway, here's Hyper-Time, right?
That's pretty much the long and short of it at this point, is Hyper-Time is going to get them out of every possible plot hole that they have created for themselves. And it's really working overtime in the pages of Justice League and in Superman, but to a lesser degree. Doomsday Clock was meant to be a look at 1 year in the future of DC Comics, but then massive delays happened, and the book is just not shipped on the monthly schedule it was originally supposed to be a part of. I mean, it's amazing to think that this book was supposed to be over with almost a year ago now. And that means that all of the other DC books probably did try to delay the events that they had planned up to a certain point, but then they just started having to get that green light to just go ahead and start moving ahead with plans. And as Doomsday Clock has unfolded, I think it's becoming clear to me that Geoff Johns was bringing back the concepts of certain things like the JSA, but he did not intend to fully reestablish them within the pages of Doomsday Clock. That was going to happen somewhere else. And that is happening in the pages of Justice League, but probably not quite the way people expected. Certainly not the way I did. As when this plot, this Justice Doom War that's happening, of course, uses a very different version of Lex Luthor than what you see in the pages of Doomsday Clock, and also gets into a lot of really crazy, eye-crossing, timey-wimey stuff that actually makes perfect sense if you've watched Avengers Endgame, because it's almost the same plot. They are, of course, after pieces of the Totality, which is the last remaining pieces of the recently destroyed Source Wall.
Source Wall, right.
That can re-imprison Perpetua back where she, from whence she was released. It can put her back in a kind of prison state. But the Totality is only a piece of what they need. Like they would need these three pieces, and then they need the Monitor, the World Forger, and the Anti-Monitor all working together to basically do what they did before when they imprisoned their mother in the Source Wall. So right now we're in the midst of all of that happening, and in order to get all of the Totality that they need, much like the Totality itself, the members of the Justice League have to split up and travel through time, both to the past and to the future, in order to find the other pieces. A lot of it is linked back to Starman's staff and all that that good stuff. If you're a Starman fan, that'll probably sound familiar. And, of course, traveling to the past and to the future means you're going to see some weird shit. And in this case, they see a past. Certain members of the Justice League go to the past. They go back to December 7th, 1941, of all dates. And they encounter the JSA, but they do not recognize them. And as it turns out, agents of Doom, some of the ones that some of the villains that work for Lex Luthor, have managed to beat the Justice League into the past and start changing things. But of course, Perpetua, being what she is preventing the changes they make in the past from affecting the present day that they are in, because she needs things to have happened that way for a reason. And if your eyes don't cross trying to make all of that make sense in your head, then you've probably been reading comics for a really long time and you're used to this sort of thing.
Well, as long as it has nothing to do with the dark multiverse and the Batman Who Laughs, because I'm just tired of that.
Well, no dark multiverse really mentioned so much here, and definitely no Batman Who Laughs. This is all Lex Luthor, the Legion of Doom, and Perpetua versus the Justice League.
So. And boosting the villains, the year of the villain, it's all about plussing. Yep. Them and Lex's big plot. Meanwhile, we have Leviathan going on too. You know, there's a lot of big stuff happening all over the place at DC at the same time.
Yeah, and we're starting to see some of that connective tissue happening. Like Event Leviathan is, of course, happening. Most recent issue of that was really good, and much like Doomsday Clock, it starts to really lay bare the things that are happening, or at least give you an idea of how powerful an organization that that Leviathan has become, because they're able to pretty much handle Superman without harming him, but at the same time they can render him a non-factor, and that's pretty impressive. Bendis's writing on that is really great. He's got me hooked with this whole mystery. I still haven't really figured out who Leviathan is. I keep bouncing back and forth between a couple of suspects, and I'm probably completely wrong. But man, he hooks me with every issue. Each issue gives me something new to really look forward to. And despite how big and important the story feels, it also feels like this one is kind of the low-key story at DC right now, because you've got Doomsday Clock and Justice League and all the stuff happening over in Superman, the Legion stuff that's happening as well. All that seems to be kind of overshadowing what's happening with Event Leviathan, but man, I really feel like Event Leviathan is going to wind up being a lot more important in the grand scheme of things than people may realize right now.
Well, and at the end of the year coming up, we have something involving the heroes getting infected, and that ties back to the dark multiverse. And I don't know where they're telling that story.
That is happening in the pages of Batman Superman, and there's also going to be that a series of one-shots that kind of give some background on probably how each of these new Secret Six, for lack of a better term, wound up infected and wound up being what they are. And, of course, if those characters have solo books like Hawkman and Shazam, the effects may be felt in their solo titles as well, certainly in Hawkman. I started reading the new Batman Superman series. I actually really enjoyed the first issue. There is something to this. I think it's going to be very entertaining and certainly has some great artwork. So I can at least recommend that first issue. It's worth a look.
I may just end up waiting, as I am threatening to do with so many of these things, until they get on DC Universe, because there's a lot of comics to be read right now. My goodness.
There really is. I still have a giant stack that I haven't caught up on, but I did read the big heavy hitters, the stuff that's really the continuity driver books for DC right now. And as we alluded to, There's a lot going on with Superman and with the Legion.
Yes.
And a lot of that does tie to Event Leviathan. One other book that I wanted to just give a quick little shout out to, because it was probably my favorite book that I've read this month, that was Lois Lane #3. Oh my dear God. Greg Rucka writes a perfect Lois Lane. He is nailing this. And he gave, there's this one moment in here that is probably going to be like one of my favorite moments in comics for this entire year. And it's a moment after a big kind of dust up event where Lois has been tailing this like Russian operative who's kind of turned like informant. And she's trying to get a little bit more recon, a little more information, like have a face to face with him. But then a whole like violent event occurs, and you're not really sure who the target is in the room. Like, is it Lois? Is it this guy? Like, you don't really know. There's a lot of misdirection happening. And you have Renee Montoya, who's been like Lois's bodyguard slash like investigator, who's you know, been working this case with her. And at the end of the scene, whenever the cops and the emergency services are kind of there cleaning up, Superman also makes an appearance and is just hovering above everyone, allowing himself to be seen and photographed. Now, one of the big things that's been playing in the background of this series is Lois has been photographed kissing Superman, but her marriage to Clark is public information as well. So there's this whole, like, is this an affair? Is this something that's going on? And it starts to reveal the problematic nature of Superman's secret identity in the modern era. But the moment that really got me was as she and Renee are walking away from the scene, Lois seems to be accosting someone, and Renee thinks that she's talking to her. And she starts to interrupt her, like, hey, wait a minute, I was just trying to help. And then Lois looks at her and says, I'm not talking to you. And then she goes back to the whole, the next thing she says is, I know you can hear me, so allow me to be very clear. And she goes on to this whole, like, you can't just show up like this and grandstand, because that's exactly what you were doing. You allowed yourself to be seen even though you didn't have to, because you definitely went through that place at super speed and nobody saw you, and they wouldn't have unless you wanted them to. And the reason you did it was because you were trying to make a statement to the people who did it, because you're saying you're trying to protect me and I don't need you to do that. So Greg Rucka absolutely nailed that scene. It is one of my favorite moments in comics this year. And also because even though Lois and Clark had a bit of a disagreement there, they talked about the whole situation as adults, as a longtime couple, and they got their shit worked out. And it's all fine. So to me, that's just a testament to powerful writing, powerful characterization on the part of Greg Rucka, and some of the absolute best Lois and Superman writing that's been going on right now. Also, it loosely ties to Event Leviathan.
Don't we have a reveal of some detectives of note at the end of that book, too?
We do indeed. I thought that the Renee Montoya question was going to be the only one that we saw in this book, but then out of nowhere, Vic Sage makes his presence known, and we have a face-to-no-face moment between Renee and Vic. That was absolutely awesome, too. Mike Perkins drew the hell out of that scene. He deserves a whole lot of credit for his work on this series. So his action scenes were just kinetic. They were just popping off the page. Absolutely loved this issue. I can't recommend Lois Lane enough.
Did we also have a certain stretchy individual, or am I thinking of a different book?
I think there was an appearance from the Elongated Man, but
yes,
we get more about him in Event Leviathan, actually, because somebody was asking why Plastic Man
that's
is here
right
instead
that's
of
the
Elongated.
Last page that's right
yeah
that's
right. I was like, why are you here instead of Elongated Man? But then, as it turns out, Elongated Man has actually been working behind the scenes with a different group.
Right. That's what I was thinking, that last page reveal on Event Leviathan. Also, this is really his first appearance in Rebirth, isn't it? Or even – I'm trying to think. When did we even see him in New 52?
I think we did, but he was always like – very background, if we saw him at all. I think he was almost thrown in just as an Easter egg for the most part. Certainly hasn't had much of a role, but this goes to show that, nope, Bendis fully intended to use Elongated Man. We just had no idea how he was going to do it. And now, Event Leviathan number 4, there he is, and it's awesome.
Good, because he's been on the bench, and poor Plastic Man's been everywhere, it feels like. You know, used in JLA and Terrifics in his own miniseries by Gail Simone. But let's give Ralph some shine, too, because the guy's a good detective on his own right.
I'm glad to see him getting some love here, like getting a chance to be part of something. I'm not sure what this other team of investigators is really all about yet, but I suspect that Event Leviathan number 5 is going to drop like a whole bunch of answers before we get to the big climax in number 6.
So still a few weeks away.
Yeah, we still got a little while to go before we get there, but so far, Event Leviathan has been like my second favorite behind Doomsday Clock as far as the event stuff goes, and I can't recommend that in Lois Lane and probably Action Comics. I put those all on your list and definitely pick through every issue because there's always something cool happening.
There are a couple other things we should talk about. Should we talk Batman next, or should we talk about an excellent one-shot? Well, actually, it's one of two that came out that advertised itself as a Legion book, but turned out to be more of a history of the DC Universe in the future book that I liked quite a bit.
Yeah, I think we'll go there first because it also ties back to Bendis's other book, Superman, which also had one hell of an issue this month.
Yeah, Superman 15, one of the best comic books I've read in a long time. Great art by Ivan Reis. I always say it wrong. But tied up a lot of things, both the Jor-El story and the monster that he created, whose name I never remember.
Rogal Zar.
Thank you, Rogal Zar. We created the United Planets. The Legion really had their first appearance in DC continuity. Lots of great John Kent stuff and Supergirl. So, yeah, that was a fantastic single issue.
How heartbreaking was that Jor-El ending, though?
But it was also, you know, if you read what he says and what he knows and what he shares with the other Jor-El, it's pretty cool to me.
Yeah, it was a great scene. It was like he got to tell himself that everything was going to be okay, that his son did exactly what they always hoped he would do.
And that he and Laura were making the right choice with this. So
like it was reaffirming that. And wrapping up a thread that Geoff Johns actually started before Rebirth actually began. So this has been a long-running thread, and to see it finally come to a very satisfying conclusion and launch us right into the new age of the Legion of Superheroes was really, really cool. I loved issue.
Yeah, you got Adam Strange kind of being the play-by-play man, kind of filling in all the blanks of the stuff that's happening and breaking all the news to Superman. I like that. Adam Strange due for a big miniseries here, Mystery in Space, from Tom King in the future. One other thing I wanted to get to in this story, and it's eluding me, but I'll think about it in a second. I'll get it. Oh, yeah, Zod and family are given a little bit more slack than Jor-El is.
Very much so. They are not really held as criminals, and I think it's because Zod's helping Superman there at the end with Zar and like really taking down the whole like gang of super criminals who had been helping him. So like Zod made the right choice there, and I gotta commend Bendis for doing something, for making a ballsy choice with the Zod family that I did not expect him to do. He seems to have like really developed Zod in a way that I think a lot of other writers were afraid to do in a seemingly permanent way. And it was that Zod kind of realized we really are in this together. Like, we are the last surviving Kryptonians, and it's far more important for us to try and reestablish some kind of society somewhere and learn from the mistakes that our Kryptonian brethren made before and tried to be better. Not conquerors, not, you know, like bloodthirsty rulers, but to rebuild the spirit of a people. Like, that was the most important thing. And it really seemed like Zod and his family fully realized that by the end of the issue, and he and Superman part on really good terms.
Yeah, different to see in kind of a nice moment between John Kent and Zod's son, who was once thought to be Superman's son, yeah. too.
You know? I loved that. I love that bit of dialogue. It's like, mm-hmm. I really have to go to the bathroom, and I don't want to go here.
I won't want to go here. Yeah, no, Bendis, I think, is not everybody's enjoying him on Superman. I don't know why, because I really like it. Yeah, this was for me, and I have been off the books just trying to catch up. I was able to get what was going on very easily by just picking up this issue. So, if you have fear that I'm not going to be able to keep up with this, or if you just want to get current, go ahead and try. You know, the information's out there if you need to do recaps. But I just hate being spoiled, right? So I wanted to at least get to know what was going on with Legion here before everything comes crashing down. Although Legion didn't get a lot of individual moments in this issue, but they had a lot of individual pictures. You know, we got to see the whole group, but the funny thing about the Legion is they showed up a little early and they were afraid that they were going to mess up the whole moment that they came for.
Yeah, I thought that was a great little funny bit. Like, oh God, we arrived just a little too early, and now we're instead of witnessing the event, we're stumbling on top of it. And,
yeah.
Really good moment there. Kind of class. It feels like it's a classic Legion moment, classic teenager moment. I dig the characterization so far, though. You're right; they don't have much depth yet, but that's coming. We're about to get a whole big Legion story, and that's going to go off and be its own thing. While Superman is going to go down a different path, but. That leads us to Bendis' other big book for this month, the one, the highly anticipated Legion of Superheroes Millennium, Part 1 of 2, by Bendis and a who's who of artist heavyweights, including Jim Lee, Dustin Nguyen, and Andrea Sorrentino. Todd, you are the Legion fan here on DC for you. So
yes.
What did you think of Millennium?
Well, I loved it. And Millennium, you know, telling the story of 1,000 years into the future, we use the plot device of a character who is not known to be immortal, but now is apparently immortal. And it's a great storytelling device because she's of a split personality. If you haven't read it, I don't want to necessarily spoil it. This is a long time DC character that has been kind of on the shelf for a while, but what I thought was a nice sci-fi twist is, you know, in the future science gets better and medicine improves and vaccinations, etc. Well, the condition this character has been cured at birth, so they've stopped making the medicine for this character. So she becomes very desperate to ration what she has. It's just a very, very smart take on the concept. You also get President Supergirl in the future, drawn by Jim Lee. That was an excellent section. You have Commandy and Batman Beyond. All very well told. Excuse me. I was maybe expecting just kind of a more Legion-centric, but this is the storyline that's going to take you to there. Like, following the timeline to where the Legion show up. And I can't wait for number two. I don't know who's going to be on the art team, but I sure liked Sorrentino and Lee, especially doing the art. And it didn't read to me like a Legion book. It read more like an event book, or one of those, when you're having an event book, you have these very important one-off side stories. And that was this to me. So what did you think?
I really liked this a lot. I have never been like really all that on fire for Legion of Superhero stuff. I have read very little Legion.
Right.
My history is Legion of Three Worlds and Superman and the Legion of Superheroes from Jeff Johns and Gary Frank. this actually made me very curious to see how all this is going to work. And I think it's because Bendis used a character that he's using in Action Comics, his Rose and Thorn character, who people know as a split personality character. And like you said, revealing that whole, oh, she's immortal, she doesn't age. And her Thorn side has been suppressed by this medication. Well, now we're following her journey through the next, maybe 100 years into the future, maybe 85 years or something into the future when this book starts.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're following her in that through line to 1,000 years into the future, where we go through all of this connective stuff, all these crazy things that, honestly, I never knew where Kamandi really fit in the timeline, if he even did at all.
Right.
And
it's kind of been vague before.
Yeah, it's real. Vague is a great word for it. Like, you just don't know. Or maybe he's just an alternate Earth. But no, this is like, no, he's part of the timeline. And here is the future. Like, you've got the Batman Beyond part of it. You've got Kamandi, like, way down the road. And then way out from him,
right,
we get the actual Legion era, where society and humans have, like, been reestablished. The whole, like, you know, the, I guess it's the, what did we call it in Superman? The United Planets, I guess.
Yeah. And that's the era Legion, you know, historically has taken place in. I don't think it was 100% clear what was going on at the end. I think that'll be more brought up, you know, at the beginning of issue 2, and that will probably be a little bit more Legion centric, but gosh, I really enjoyed this quite a bit. And, I like the little bit of her being so desperate to find another immortal, you know, and thinking that Batman Beyond was really our Batman.
Yeah. She thought Terry might be Bruce. But I mean, that's what desperation will do to you. And it's illustrated so well. Bendis writes her character in a way that I found to be very relatable. It was kind of a hit home issue as well, talking about how she's dealing with mental illness and cannot get the help she actually needs because the medicine she needs isn't really there for her. This is all around good stuff. Made me very excited for part two. And actually, like, between this and Superman, I'm kind of excited for what Bendis is going to do on Legion. I'm pretty excited to see what he does. I'm at least going to try the book out. But so far, pretty good start. And this is coming from somebody who doesn't really, like, has never really cared that much about Legion before, but they certainly have my attention now.
I'm excited about it too. I was looking through my memorabilia and I opened up my case of rings, had my glass ring in it, had the old pinky ring I used to wear, and it has a whole bunch of Green Lantern rings. It's my little Planet Krypton case, and in there is also my Legion flight ring. And apparently there are going to be more Legion flight rings on the horizon for people.
Yep. There's a new flight ring promotion coming for Legion of Superheroes number 1 whenever that comes out. Going to have, you know, plenty of the standard, the gold ones that the Legion are known for wearing. But according to Brian Bendis, some platinum versions are going to be floating around out there, and those are going to be pretty rare. So if you're headed to, like, I'm pretty sure shops are going to do a midnight release event for this. If you're headed out to your local shops, be on the lookout. You might actually see one of those, which would be really, really cool. See how many of those actually make it out into the wild.
Well, that's very good news. You know, it's kind of like, I think enough comic pros have warm and fuzzies for the Legion that it wasn't going to be on the shelf forever. And so, you know, even though it's maybe cooled or intimidated some of the general fandom at large, people who only started reading the last 15, 20 years or so, Legion at one point was DC's number 2 book next to Titans. This was a long time ago. Imagine Batman not being one of your top 3 books.
Right.
But now we're going to get a chance to get in on the ground floor on a new Legion team, new Legion continuity. And I just hope the sales numbers are strong on this and that people give it a chance, because I'm looking forward to it.
And superstar creative team on it too, with Brian Bendis, and I believe it's Ryan Sook that's going to be
doing
art. if that can't sell a book, I don't know what will. But before we move on to other things, like we were talking about Superman earlier and how he ties to all this. Well, his book is headed into a new direction because, as it was revealed in the December solicits, he's going to be revealing his secret identity to the world come the December issues of Superman and the, I believe it's Lois Lane number 6. So given what I just saw in Lois Lane about
right.
how they perfectly illustrated why his secret identity is more problematic and more of an albatross than it is a help these days, I actually see this as a very positive way of moving the character forward, because when you frame it like that, it's like, okay, well, his secret identity is causing more problems than it's solving. And if his, I guess we're sticking with this, unfortunately, that the Kents are indeed dead and are not going to be resurrected. That being the case, I can't imagine a reason to even keep the Clark Kent's secret identity. Like, he'll probably, I think he'll always keep the name Clark Kent because that's how he sees himself. That's his chosen name. But the idea of, you know, the glasses, the day job, and, you know, trying to shy away from the spotlight sometimes, I think those days are about to come to an end, and it's probably honestly for the best. Because in the modern era, secret identities don't work the same way.
Well, I'm of several minds at this. I could be the guy who goes, well, that's just lazy storytelling, lazy writing. A creative writer could make it work. But then you also have to look at the day and age we live in. Certainly not a lot of secret identities, especially now in the MCU, for, you know, and what's the most successful interpretation of comics in the history of comic books, etc., in pop culture, it's the MCU. So I think it depends what kind of story you want to tell. And Superman having his secret identity was a way to protect his family, you know, and Lois is showing us she doesn't necessarily need to be protected. And
nor
and
does
his
she
son,
want to be.
Right, yeah, with that conversation. And who knows where John will even be, if he's going to be living in the future or if he's going to be going back and forth with the Legion like the original Superboy did in the 60s. So,
and John is imbued with most of his dad's power, so I'm pretty sure he's okay.
Right, right. It's not as though, you know, he's powerless and could be just picked off. You know, they could a kidnapper could go and take care of him. There's who's going to tug on Superman's cape here? So again, if Rucka and Bendis are doing it, I have confidence it's going to be fine.
Same. And like Greg and Nick said on HGF recently, maybe it doesn't stick. Maybe it only lasts like 6 months. But I do actually hope that it lasts a lot longer, because unlike all the other times where Superman's identity has been revealed, this time it seems like they're saying he's the one that's going to do it.
Right.
He's going to make that decision. And to me, that is the best possible way to do it. Like, give Superman all the agency and allow him that character moment to willingly drop the secret identity to the world and say, this is who I am. And it's time the world knew. And then we can deal with the ramifications and fallout of that, to which I'm sure there will be plenty. now, moving into his big partner in justice, not partner in crime, partner in justice, Batman. He had some interesting stuff happening over in Batman 78 and 79. And if you are a Batcat fan, boy, are these issues for you. If you like you some Bruce and Selina together, that is all these issues are. It is two jam-packed, beautifully drawn Clayman issues of Batman with Bruce and Selina on a beach reconciling, figuring out their issues, and coming together as like basically what feels like a new dynamic duo. They're about to go back to Gotham City and kick Bane's ass, and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, Tom King's run winding down, and then it's going to take place in the year-long or 10-issue-long, however many, Batman Catwoman book. And that will be great stuff, too. I just wonder, you know, is the magic between them because it's forbidden? You know what I mean? What happens when they just let their lives and all the other BS in the way get out of the way and just focus on each other and team up and be unified? Is part of the chemistry going to be affected by that?
That's addressed in those two issues. The idea of them just being, of them being together as people, and realizing that neither of them is like what they thought of themselves. Like Selina at times thought of herself as, you know, as the thief, as the person who did things like stealing because it made her feel good. But then she winds up being very conflicted about that in the face of her genuine love of Bruce. And Bruce finally admits that the vow that he took to be Batman really isn't the only defining trait of who he is, that he can be more than that, that he doesn't have to be just that, and that forcing himself to be was just that. He was forcing himself to do it when there was this person in his life who actually did get him to let go of it for a moment and be a human being. And in those moments, he was supremely happy, like happier than he had ever been. And as these two issues evolve out, it becomes this beautiful reconnecting of Batman and Catwoman. All the folks that were mad about the wedding issue, these issues are putting things together in a pretty tremendous way. I am all on board with all of this, especially the way it's drawn. My God, Clayman draws a gorgeous Catwoman.
And well, I'm kind of worried now that something bad, very, very bad, is going to happen here in about a year and a half to the status quo.
I hope it doesn't. I really want Batman and Catwoman to be a permanent thing after this. And it feels like it's time. Like, let's pull the trigger on it and not be afraid of it. There's also a tease in 79 that made it seem like maybe a certain death that just happened didn't actually happen.
Okay.
Maybe Alfred's not actually dead. There's a bit of dialogue in this book that makes it seem like, nope, Alfred is actually okay, and there's more going on here. We'll have to see how it plays out, but it could easily go that way, so I'm very intrigued by this possibility.
With a series, again, Doomsday Clock is happening in the future, and Alfred's there making pancakes, and if you have two of your best-selling books telling different stories or being featured in different continuities, now we don't necessarily know how Doomsday Clock's going to end. Will it restart everything or create a time loop or something, but you also would have thought that the death of Alfred would have gotten a bigger push, a bigger media thing, instead of just kind of a last page shocker reveal.
Yeah, it's. I think it's a fake out.
Yeah,
I think it's a total fake, and that it's going to be revealed pretty soon that that's not actually what happened. It doesn't mean that Alfred might not quit at some point and move on, as some of the solicits seem to suggest for December, but all of that could be fake as well. There's a big, big fake out coming there, I think, but all of it, of course, is leading to the end of City of Bane, and we got the announcement, the official announcement on Batman Day this past weekend of the new Batman creative team. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, Tynion is capable. He's written Batman in Detective Comics as more of a Bat Pack type group. does great with the group dynamics in books like Justice League Dark. So I'm looking forward to seeing the stories he has. I was wondering if they were going to go a little higher profile, but it's not like he hasn't earned it. So I think, you know, they're getting Batman back on track to one issue a month and stop the double shipping.
Yeah.
Are we headed towards Batman 1000 or is that not?
Batman 100 is coming up, and allegedly James Tynion IV and Tony Daniel on art are going to go from issue 86 to issue 100, and okay. A new creative team will take over. We'll probably wind up splitting duties, I think, in issue 100, whoever that's going to be. The talk is that Brian Bendis was offered it but turned it down, so we have no idea. But honestly, we got a ways to go to 100, and since the book is going monthly now, we have even more time. So I feel like they can take their time. I know I got a couple of writers in mind I'd like to see do it, but you know, it's going to be what it's going to be.
I think they're not going to give it to somebody who doesn't deserve it. I mean, there's so many good writers for DC at this point. Guys like Tomasi, Tom Taylor, Willow Wilson is kind of hinting that she's been offered something very high. So who knows what's going to happen with Batman. It's nice that we have this Batman Universe book that is coming out now, and you get to see what Bendis on Batman, and he's scratched that itch and told some stories that, you know, we all expected him to fit on Batman, but I'm honestly really excited that he's doing things like Wonder Comics and Legion of Superheroes. So leaving that opportunity open for another writer. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who else would be a good fit. Maybe Jason Aaron.
That's actually where I was thinking about that.
All right.
That would be good.
Makes some sense, doesn't it?
It kind of would. Like, he's done so much at Marvel, he doesn't really seem to have anything other than Avengers going on right now. So yeah, man, if Jason Aaron ever got that itch to drop that Marvel exclusivity and, you know, branch out a little bit, Batman seems like it'd be a good fit for him. I could absolutely see that happening. I could also see Kelly Sue DeConnick maybe getting a shot at it. She's been doing really good things over on Aquaman.
Yeah, so. Aquaman's been solid with her as writer as well. We will see. And with Black Label, it doesn't mean that, you know, just because we have this monthly Batman book, there's so many Batman projects out there.
Yeah.
Everybody gets a crack at him.
We even got some big Batman movie news this week, unexpectedly. They dropped who our new Commissioner Gordon's going to be.
Yes.
And Robert Pattinson, playing opposite Robert Pattinson, is going to be Jeffrey Wright. Who played Felix Leiter in the Daniel Craig Bond movies. He is a pretty prominent character on Westworld. Pretty well-known character actor, somebody who's been up for lots of awards. I'm pretty excited about him being the new Commissioner Gordon. I think that's good casting.
Yeah, I mean, Gary Oldman, amazing job. It feels like Gordon is kind of a glamorous role. I don't want to say glamorous, but a meaty role for people. Now that's very attractive. You know, J.K. Simmons almost got to do something with him, but we didn't see a whole lot of that. but they're really attracting well-rounded actors for that role at this point. Jeffrey Wright, a lot of Broadway experience, a lot of TV and movie credits over the years, and always interesting projects. Has a very intelligent reputation, and loved him in the Bond films. So.
Looking forward to seeing what he does. I think that the movie's shaping up pretty well. And, of course, the other news that dropped was that Jonah Hill is being courted to play a villain in the movie. But we don't know which villain.
Right. We had Josh Gad linked previously, and now Jonah Hill, who knows? But I guess this rumor seems to have some traction. But, God, I don't know. I'm kind of done with Penguin. Honestly.
Yeah, I would like to see Riddler get another shot at it. Try something new with him, something that's not a Jim Carrey impression, preferably.
Mm-hmm.
So there's room for them to do things there. And, you know, we'll we'll see how that all shapes up, but so far so good. And you mentioned Black Label a second ago, and we got some news this week out of DC that their Brian Azzarello and Manuela Lupacino Birds of Prey book has been delayed until next year, but is going to move over to DC Black Label and be that imprint's first ongoing. What did you think of that?
Well, Azzarello has a way with the F word, as we know from 100 Bullets. if you have read that book, it's one of the all-time Vertigo classics. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. Azzarello, a very good crime-type writer. So maybe a little bit more street-level realism and blood and gore slash adult themes in this ongoing in Black Label, which is going to be kind of a mature title.
Yeah, I hope it's still in continuity, too. That's one thing that I'm kind of crossing my fingers for. Like, I know it's Black Label, but let it still be part of the main DC line. Just let it do its own thing. And speaking of books that I think probably should be part of Black Label, Suicide Squad's coming back. New ongoing from the Injustice creative team. Our boy Tom Taylor is getting a new ongoing in continuity this time.
Yeah, Magpie. I can't stop saying that, but Magpie. We just had a sighting from Magpie not long ago here.
She was in the most recent issue of Batman.
Yes. So
she's the good. She's one of the good villains, you see.
Well,
what are good villains? That's all you Superman, Batman fans from back in the day out there. I'm pretty excited about this. Suicide Squad is a book that I have tried on numerous occasions, and it never seems to hit with me. I guess it's like I love the concept, but I've never just gotten pulled into the story of it. But Tom Taylor coming in to do this, I think it may be time for me to give Suicide Squad another shot.
Yeah, the brains behind Deceased and Injustice. So kind of anything goes with Tom Taylor books. And Suicide Squad is a book that can happen. You know, characters die in the first 15 minutes or the end of the first issue of that book. And James Gunn, there I go again, is teasing that with the movie. And we need to see the book get a push to coincide with the movie. So good timing on DC's part, bringing it back. I just hope Harley Quinn is not too prominent a part of the book.
I'm kind of with you there. Like, I want her to be there, but I don't want her to be front and center.
She's overexposed.
Yeah. More than a little. Although she's got a couple of Black Label books that one of them.
Yeah, this Harleen book is going to be great.
Yeah, I think that looks awesome. And moving on from that, we've got just a little bit of television news, some pretty cool happenings over on the CW with the DCW Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover is adding some Smallville alums because the Smallville universe is being incorporated into it. That is to say that Tom Welling is coming back to be Clark Kent, maybe Superman, and Erica Durance will be likely playing double duty as Kara's mom, like she did earlier on Supergirl, but will also be reprising her Lois Lane role from Smallville. So,
yeah,
big happenings here. Lots of giddy excitement from me and the Smallville faithful. What was your reaction when that happened?
Oh, I was trying to keep it a secret from my wife, just because I knew she would get a big pop. She's a big Tom Welling fan, and everybody we all watched Smallville coming out. Couldn't wait for it every week. I'm curious to see how it goes and how they work that into it. But DC, they own everything. They can, they have all the rights to these characters. Let's make it work. I would love to see more than two sets of Clark and Lois. So we've got Welling and Durance. We have Hecklin and Bitsy Tulloch. I know Dean Cain doesn't say no to many paychecks these days, so maybe they'll bring him back. And they had Terry Hatcher as Manel's mom, so
maybe
we could do something and have three.
And don't forget, Brandon Routh is suiting back up as Superman as well.
That's true.
And, well, but if he's doing
Kate Bosworth is smacking up with that call.
I don't think they should make that call. No. I think they should. I think they've probably lost her number. Oh, the convenient thing there is that he's likely playing the Kingdom Come version of Superman, and if that's the case, his Lois is dead anyway. So
that's true. Like, that's true. Yeah, he was making babies with
Wonder Woman.
Older woman.
There you go. Like that's. So that problem is solved immediately. We don't have to worry about that. No Kate Bosworth for the Crisis on Infinite Earths. But one person that I really wish was going to make the appearance, but apparently isn't going to, is Michael Rosenbaum will not be reprising his role as Lex Luthor from Smallville. And he detailed a little bit of that earlier this week whenever he talked about the offer that was put on the table. He said it was a very low the way he described it sounded like it was a pretty low ball offer, like almost no money. They didn't give him any kind of script or like what his part in it would be. So kind of sounds like, you know, he wanted something kind of substantial, at least a little more substantial part there, and maybe it just wasn't. So I can't blame the guy really for passing on that, although it still sucks, you know. So.
Yeah, and this kind of makes me feel bad for him and kind of embarrassed for DCW. And I wish I didn't know that it was a lowball offer.
Yeah, I felt a little embarrassed for them as well. I was like, oh man, like he kind of put you guys on blast there. But if that was the case, he probably deserved to be just a little bit. Still, Crisis on Infinite Earths is going to be a hell of a crossover. It's going to be one amazing show. I can't wait to see what they do. There's so much happening with the DCW. We got an announcement this week that we don't know the name of this upcoming show, but Mia Smoke is becoming the new Green Arrow and will be with the two actresses that play Black Canary on Arrow in a brand new female-centric show, or at least one that's being developed.
Right.
It may or may not happen, but that's pretty exciting news.
Yeah, kind of fill the void that Arrow will leave with this, I don't want to say backdoor pilot, but this future storyline that we've been seeing in Arrow for a while gets its own series. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. I love future Team Arrow. I think that they were great. And speaking of stuff that's going to be happening this weekend, the people have probably been seeing the ads and hearing about all the controversy surrounding Todd Phillips' Joaquin Phoenix fronted Joker movie that's going to hit theaters this Friday. And I'm honestly kind of excited to go see it, even though I'm still very apprehensive and much against the idea of a definitive origin being told for the Joker. I like him better if he's ambiguous and we don't know where he comes from exactly.
Yeah. And I hope it's a red herring and that this isn't the Joker or something like that. But, you know, he's an unreliable narrator. That's
what I've been hearing. That's what one of the things that was mentioned in our group chat was that a review of the movie referred to him as an unreliable narrator. So if that's the case, if all of this is just a story that he's telling that may or may not be completely true, I could see myself getting on board with that.
Yeah, and that ties to the character from The Dark Knight, Joker. So, you know, he gives 4 or 5. And it honestly, it ties to the Joker ever since Killing Joke, in my recollection.
Yeah, like his origins are always in flux. You never know just exactly who he is, where he comes from. And it's better that way. The mystique of the character is what makes him so interesting. So that's kind of the only worry I have about the movie. I know that there's a lot of controversy around the level of violence apparently in the climax. And of course the what it says about certain members of society that that people find unfavorable. And honestly though, I don't see this movie making Joker into a sympathetic character. I think that you see pretty much no one in this movie is going to be your sympathetic character, at least as far as like the main focus characters. It kind of feels like this is a movie about the effects of mental illness, and when you combine that with the apathy of society, that bad things are going to happen.
Yeah, we shall see, because you know, there are a lot of sickos out there, and a lot of people just looking for an excuse. And I would hate to see that kind of mar the film, like Dark Knight. I'm sorry, Strikes Again had kind of a weak start because of that. And these times we live in. So everybody be careful when you go see Joker, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there are people out there who are just, they're going to find fuel for their rage and for their bad choices, no matter where they look. But Joker does seem to be something that could potentially attract that kind of person. And it's unfortunate that it is that way, because I think that the movie is like going to wind up being pretty good and be a great artistic expression. But we live in very rough and interesting times. So
yes,
let's all just try to go out there and have a good time at the movies, and have these conversations after we see it, because it will be a conversation worth having. There's probably going to be some a lot of uncomfortable feelings within the movie, I'm sure. And as the director of the movie even pointed out, this is the point. Like, this is meant to make you uncomfortable. It's not meant to make you root for the Joker. It's not meant to really make you root for anybody in the movie. It's, you know, his way of holding up a mirror to society, just happens to be using a comic book character.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I find interesting. It's certainly a niche type movie. I don't think that this is one that should necessarily appeal to the larger masses, but I do love the idea that a comic book movie can be challenging in that way. It's not all just popcorn fun and CGI explosions anymore.
Well, you know, DCU, and this is not necessarily a DCEU, there it is, movie. This is that new imprint that they're doing. They want to take things in a different way, different direction, and getting guys like De Niro and Scorsese on board is certainly a way to do that. So I'm curious, but I've also heard great buzz, so I'm optimistic at the same time.
You going to try and go see it this weekend?
No, I'm so busy. It's going to be like, I still have to see Downton first. It's kind of the rule.
I got you. So that is fair. And I unfortunately will not be able to find time to see it this weekend either. I hope to maybe at some point down the line, but some of our other podcasting duties are going to take precedent. So I'm going to mm-hmm. spend my time doing that. And also, of course, watching my Crimson Tide hammer Ole Miss up and down the field this weekend. That's going to be some good times for me, and hopefully I'll be watching my Falcons win on Sunday too.
Yeah, well, my team is 3-0 right now. That is certainly not going to. They're not going to end undefeated. I don't think they're nearly as good as their record is right now. But it's been fun to have a team that's starting off hot here in San Francisco.
You know, happy for the Niners. Happy they're doing well. I would love to have just a little bit of that heat, that up success over here in Atlanta. You know, I'll take any success we can get right now. I don't care.
Ah, you guys were in the Super Bowl a couple years ago. So were the Niners, actually.
Yeah, it's like we haven't looked like that Super Bowl team in a bit. But I'm hoping that we'll be getting some positive momentum going. We need it. Not as bad as they need it down in Miami. But sorry, Greg.
or in the New York Jets.
not sorry about that one.
Nope.
But in any case, that's going to about do it for this month's current events. Man, Todd, we talked about a lot of comics this time.
I read some comics. You read more comics. You know.
It was a good month. September was a good month for comics.
And it was good to talk about The Flash with our guests and Flash of Two Worlds and The Flash Pilot this month. So good stuff happening here.
Yeah, we did. We had a great month on DC for you. Next month is going to be wildly different from this one because we're going to be getting into all the scary stuff from DC Comics. And there is some good horror books to celebrate because, as you guys know, October is Halloween. So it's time to celebrate all the wonderful, spooky, scary things that that go bump in the night. And we don't just mean Batman, although he will be making at least one appearance in our talkings of the best of the best of horror comics from DC. But that will be next week when we kick off DC's Horror Month here on DC4U. In the meantime, you can check out me and Todd on social media. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Russell_Sellers. Todd, where are they finding you on the social media?
Yes, find me at Todd Weber Guitar on Twitter. We've got a protected Instagram page because I don't know why. Maybe it's because I post music on there or stuff sometimes, or maybe just because I think Instagram's kind of a cesspool with a lot of Russian bots and people trying to send you requests that you just don't want. But if you're a fan of the show, follow me at Guitars of Green on the Instagram. Join Place to Be Nation Comics on Facebook. Thank you so much for listening.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for always listening to DC4U. We will be back next week to kick off a brand new theme month as we are heading towards the finale of this season. This has been a great first season. We love what we're doing, and we love that you guys have made us a hit on Place to Be Nation Pop. Thank you guys so much for listening, and go out there, read you some comics. Try not to get stuck in hyper time because, well, then you won't know if you're coming or going.
Yeah, and I have one more thing to say. DC for you.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. And we want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, Place to Be Nation Pop and other feeds. This is Todd Weber, your manager, here to tell you all about stuff going on PlaceToBeNation.com. We've got weekly shows, including DC for You. We've got the Hard Traveling Fanboys every Friday. They're attempting to fix the terrible 2005 film entitled Elektra. Can they do it? Find out in the latest episode of Fix It or Nix It from the HTF. just talked about DC4U, of course. Earlier this month, we covered all things Flash. This week in the NFL drops every week, Thursday or Friday. Roger and Johnny recapping the last set of games, preparing you for the upcoming weekend's batch. We've also got on Mondays the Brother-Sister Rewatch. That's where a pair of siblings check out vintage episodes of The Office, review them, see if they hold up. Of course they do. It's The Office, one of the greatest shows of all time. Not one of these Johnny-come-lately shows people like Seinfeld or Friends. Pop goes to the movies. Scott and Jennifer review the highly anticipated sequel to Stephen King's It. Unlocked in theater, number 12, Andy Atherton, that is, welcomes David Sunday to Live Watch. So, I Married an Axe Murderer. Harriet, on Looking Forward, Looking Back. It's the summer movie recap and wager results. Andy's joined by Miranda, Scott, Tim, and Russell to see who won. Of course, yours truly would have won, but the person running the contest changed the rules at the last minute, so I finished in second. Anyway, Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament continues. We're in the regional finals round, a.k.a. the Sweet 16. I think that's a little obsolete now. I think we're down to the final 8 or final 6. Anyway, if you haven't checked this out yet, get on that fast. It's on Facebook. Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament. We've got another tournament around the corner, so stay tuned. We've got also a wrestling feed. Not just comics and pop culture, but Place to Be Nation brings you the best in wrestling content. Wrestling Warzone's back with episode number 30, featuring the WCW Clash of the Champions, XXXII. So that's 32. On the fifth episode of Extreme Three-Way Dance, that's a show that covers ECW stuff. JT, Jenny, and Johnny dance their way through three episodes of ECW Hardcore TV from March and April of 1994. The main event, Scott Criscolo's show. They have hit episode number 133. Congratulations to them. They preview the Clash of Champions that happened a couple weeks, then they go back to 2002 for the next classic PPV recap. Then be sure to check out Place to Be Nation's Clash of the Champions reaction show with Chris Zellner, Devin Hales. We've got Hell in a Cell coming up in next month. I will be there. Yes, that's right. Also have Jenny in the Gems. That's where Jennifer Smith looks at hidden gems on WWF Network. Did I say WWF Network? It's the WWE Network. You should check it out. Every Wednesday, we've got Glenn's Weekly Walk on PlaySpeedNation.com. Got Campus Hot Takes, where college football fans talk about what's going on. And Notre Dame lost to Georgia. That's all that matters. So, if you're shopping over at Amazon, use our link, placetobenation.com/Amazon, and helps us out. That's right. Keep our site alive. We've also got social media pages, Place to Be Nation on Facebook and Twitter. We also have a message board, www.bigelow34.proboards.com. And we're having a big contest at the end of the year. A project where we rank the top WWE television or pay-per-view matches of all time. Hey, thanks for checking out DC4U.